If you're struggling or you're having a hard time and you're afraid of failure and you feel like there's all these blockades in your life, allow it to empower you and motivate you to move forward.
Love Gangster with Adrian Boysell.
Welcome back, everybody, to Love Gangster. I'm your host, Adrian Boysell, and today I have a very special episode with an even more special guest. I want to introduce a military veteran, political candidate for Roseville City Council, an entrepreneur, and the CEO of Changing Cadence. That being said, let's go ahead and introduce Mr. Nick Boosie.
What's up, brother?
Good.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's jump into the conversation. Well, thank you for the last minute show up.
Yeah.
You made that comment on TikTok and said, hey, how do I get on the show? And boom, less than 24 hours, here you are.
I'm always quick to react.
You really are. Yeah, and that's what I've loved about your relationship. Our relationship kicked off pretty quick through social media, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But then we got to meet up in person. I think we went to Brookfields?
Yeah, with Brookfields, had some lunch and just kind of talked about things in life and got to know each other. And I thought, you know, hey, this is a great guy and I want to continue this relationship. So, yeah, we've done that.
Well, I think the interesting part about that, and it's going to kind of be the underlying theme of this whole episode, is I met you and actually had that face-to-face with you in a time where I was going through the biggest struggle and the biggest challenge of my whole life.
Yeah.
Like my whole life, the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with. And you showed up for me. You listened, you shared as well, and you were just there for me as a brother. And it immediately forged a connection and a synergy that I haven't had with very many people in my life. Like, I've built a lot of relationships, built a lot of friendships, but to have that depth of like, hey, brother, I'm truly here for you. And if you need anything, and for somebody that I only talked to on social media a few times, that actually meant a lot for me and gave me a lot of inspiration to keep going. And I think what drew me to you, I wanted to start by saying this, was the fact that you are, as far as I'm concerned, the hero type of personality. When we look at archetypes, you have that heroic personality, like you will fall on the sword for people. And, you know, the fitness thing is a big kind of transition and shift in my life, but you come from a fitness background, a military background, and I think a lot of those things kind of helped teach you, you know, who you are, but who you are as a person, I think, shines through. And those extra skills, if you will, the skills that you've stacked have helped you become this person that you are today. So let's just get a little bit into your background so that people can understand like how impactful your military career, your fitness career, what you did with your nutrition business, and just kind of give them a background about who you are and what you've done.
Yeah, I can tell you for certain that, you know, little me, you know, 10-year-old me would never say that I'd be sitting here doing what I'm doing or the stories that I could tell. I never saw that in my future. But, you know, I grew up in a very small town. You know, I have 5 sisters, grew up primarily with my mother, only boy, very close in age. So there was a lot of challenges, you know, and a lot of trials. And, you know, so you learn a lot of how to overcome certain things, being a kid, you know, an only boy in a family of all women. And, you know, I actually learned to see things from different aspects and sides. And, you know, I remember in history class, right? You know, it was a dead silence. There was absolutely no noise really whatsoever, at least from the class standpoint, except for this TV. And I remember just hearing the news anchors talk about 9/11. And I wasn't certain exactly what that meant. Kid in history class, mm-hmm. It didn't really dawn on me that this moment in life was going to start the first chapter of my life in general.
Wow.
And the moment I remember seeing individuals jumping out of that window and falling down to their death, that's when I knew. And then when another plane came in, that's when I knew that this is a historical moment, a tragedy, if will, that will be in the textbooks that I will be part of.
Yep.
So I did join the military.
Wow.
And yeah, I just wanted to serve. My love for my country, it was enormous. And I knew that I had to do something to not just, you know, build myself, but also be a part of something larger than myself that can be a big part of this country's moving forward. And so I joined as combat arms and field artillery.
Wow. And how many years did you do?
I did 13 years.
Whew, that's 13. A good stint.
Yeah.
Any close calls?
Yeah, there's a few. Yeah.
Sure.
I got, there was a very large IED this individual took. Multiple large canisters that are used for swamp coolers filled with explosives. And I think about 6 of them were placed into a dump truck. And although I was very far from this blast, this individual tried to target the Al-Rashid Hotel where the prime minister was giving a speech. Ooh. And the blast was so big that my right arm actually touched my left shoulder. So I have a lot of surgeries done.
Wow.
And I got compartment syndrome in my leg for walking, I know, 10 miles a day, every day for a whole year. I had to get a fasciotomy. Yeah.
Wow. As somebody that tried to join the military, because I saw the same thing. I was sitting in my freshman year in high school. So I don't know how close we are in age. We're pretty close.
Yeah, I think it was a sophomore or a freshman. Okay. I think it was a sophomore.
So I'm 36, about to be 37 in like five days.
Yeah.
Very close in age. And I was sitting in my freshman art class. I remember walking in, and the first time I saw was, you know, I was at home and I saw my stepmom crying in front of the TV. But then I went into my art class and I'm just sitting there at the TVs watching what was happening. The whole kind of whole world stopped, right? And I remember thinking of that moment, like my grandfather was a military guy. I'm like, I have to go to the military. Like this, it was already something I wanted to do, but this kind of just like secured it for me. And I was like, I knew that we were going to go to war after this.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, I didn't get to go in, even though I did the whole process, did the MEPS, did the ASVAB, went through the whole thing and the physical and all that. But I found out I was deaf in my left ear. And so they're like, sorry, we can't let you in. So I tried all these different branches, tried every branch and tried to get waivers and just nothing would get me through. As somebody that didn't get to cross that line of the boot camp side of things and just the early military career and even the 13 years that you did, how did you find the transition of life? Because I don't know how you grew up in terms of your family with your sisters and all that, but I grew up as kind of a free-spirited kind of rebel, as I would consider that, and still that today. Did you find it easy to conform and be part of the military coming into it and doing the whole boot camp thing? Was it easy for you, or did you find it challenging?
You know, I wish I was always a humble free spirit as a kid. I was a wild child. I was, you know, hard to find. Mm-hmm. I was always out causing trouble.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom. but yeah, it was a little different to be accustomed to. You know, it's the first time that someone is telling you have to do something this or that, no matter what. And back then it was a little more retributive.
Yeah.
But eventually after a while you get accustomed to not just how the customs and courtesies are and how you have to react and how you have to behave. Eventually you do come across that line to really mold with the culture. But I think the hardest part is more so transitioning out of the service because there is such a large structure within the military.
Yeah.
You know, there's this hierarchy and there's this way of doing things. And it's very precise. So if you think of like code and the penal code in the judicial system, that encompasses everything that, you know, what the law is and how the law needs to be interpreted. Well, that's kind of how the military, you know, structured. Mm-hmm. So when you get out of the service, it's really hard to find that structure in today's society. As you can tell, it's kind of a little all over the place.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge is worse to accommodate for, you know, what you've done and where you're going to now.
Got it.
In the civilian world.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine being barked at, screamed at, yelled at, and having all that stuff happen. I was ready for it. I mean, I was doing SEAL training with the Navy out of Folsom Lake. I was geared up for it. What do you think? Was there a moment during boot camp or during your training that you felt like, man, I don't think I can do this?
Yeah. You know, I will say there was a moment when we were walking so often, so much that this is my second tour in Iraq.
Wow.
It was like 120 degrees. With all your gear on, it's another 10 degrees. It's like 135, 130.
Oof.
And I was carrying this thing, which is called the Guardian. So this is a system that goes in your backpack. It's like another 120 pounds.
Wow.
And it puts out this this signal that blocks any type of signal that's to an explosive device that's by electronic command.
Got it.
And I just remember my leg was going out. It was hot. I was sweating just as fast as I was drinking water.
Wow.
And I felt like I just couldn't do it anymore. My leg was going to collapse.
Yeah.
But, you know, in basic training, I tore some muscle ligaments.
Wow.
And you had to, basically, you had to go through this course that you had to jump over the walls. You had to carry the dummy. You had to dress the wound.
Yeah.
And I'm on crutches. And if you do not pass this moment, you're what's called recycled back through step one.
Whoa.
And there was no way in hell I was going to do that again.
Yeah.
But so I dropped the crutches and I did on one foot.
With all of that, then you come and you're coming towards the end of your, I mean, when did you decide that you were going to be done with the military? How did you decide not to continue? Like, what was the?
I will say a kind of a sad story. I don't tell everybody this, but I think it's a good time now.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really have much support other than family so far away in the military. I was kind of that the odd duck out. You know, I did well at my job. I didn't really quite, you know, associate with too many people within the service, but I was really good at my job.
Yeah.
I think when I came back from Iraq the second time, to nobody to hug me, nobody to, you know, say hello, welcome back. And, you know, I went to my apartment that I was paying for when I was overseas, and there was another tenant there.
Wow.
My roommate that stayed back in redetachment left. So I had no place to live, nowhere to go. And I just was hidden. It was really hard, you know, coming back from your second tour. And I remember going on this 4 mile run, mm-hmm. and I was running and running and running, and I just kept going. And I turned around, you know, it's really dark. Mm-hmm. And I remember when my emotions came up so much that it was harder to bear the emotion, but also the physicality of running for so long, that I just kind of collapsed to my knees.
Man.
And I said, you know, this is it. I don't know what to do. You know, God, please, you know, give me a sign. Is there something to give me strength to keep moving forward? And, you know, just right there, there's just a little bit of light in the peripherals of my eyesight. And I remember looking up, and the only illumination there was in that dark setting was a sign on a church hill next to a church that said, "You'll never know how strong you are until being strong is all you have." And that's, I think, where everything started, the next chapter of my life of public service and doing and looking at things through a different lens.
That was the catalyst, that moment, that defining moment.
That was the catalyst.
When you're brought to the edge of yourself.
I was.
So I've wondered about that with military, because I've had so many close friends. My best friend in the whole world, Jason Wallace is his name, did 4 tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, blown up, Purple Heart. I mean, everybody in his vehicle died. And I've watched him on 4th of July when they're shooting off fireworks and he's having a PTSD type of attack and run into his truck to grab his gun. I mean, I've seen the effects that the military has had on people, and what they do, and what I've learned recently in the military is to train you that if your person goes down, you're not supposed to feel that in that moment, right? So they train you to not feel, but then I heard recently that they're starting to do this kind of reintegration now in the military, where they're training military when they come out, how to feel again, right? How to come back and be part of society. Did you experience any of that, like disconnect and kind of bottling your emotions and clamping yourself up, you know, during your military time and like trying to come out of that?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of a unicorn. I did very well when it came in the military as far as handling things, but that's because they also train you to do that. You know, when someone goes down and they get injured, just like the medics get trained, the 68 Whiskeys in the Army, they teach you how to, you know, talk to your patients when they're frantic.
Yeah.
And just say, hey, everything's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
And they also try and teach you that too if you're someone that's coming down. But I do know there's a lot of people who have been suffering though.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also one of the things I do to take care of veterans who are suffering.
Yeah.
A lot of my unit who went to Afghanistan, when I went to Fort Hood, which is now Fort Cavazos, I think about, I don't know, maybe half of them didn't come back. And since then, every year we get somebody who committed suicide or drug overdose or addiction or is currently fighting an addiction. And this disconnect that we're talking about happens almost instantaneously, along with identity dissociative disorder.
DID.
And which, you know, also was, you know, once dubbed multi-personality disorder, or just in general, disassociating yourself with society.
Yep.
And so, we see it all the time. It's an issue and it's a problem. And I think it needs to be addressed a little more and a little bit better in the military transition.
So do you feel like you've kind of had a special gift in terms of being able to kind of keep yourself in a great mental space?
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's a gift, but, you know, for me, I think it's my passion for helping others has been a good mask for falling into a different type of hole. I had this passion to see people thrive. And when I see people hurting, I can't, that's what hurts me.
Of course.
Just seeing people hurting, no one developing any type of solution or no one offering resources. Some people, when they're hurting and they're depressed, they're not looking for resources. They're trying to pull themselves with that rope out of the hole.
That's right. Well, that's interesting because I've had some quite a bit of traumatic stuff happen in my life. And one thing that I've discovered over this last couple of years is that I have this gift, and that's where this is coming from. I have this gift and this ability to remain completely calm in chaos. The craziest stuff could be going on around me, people fighting, bar fights, whatever. You know, I worked security in my young years, all kinds of situations that I've been in that, I mean, people trying to run over people with cars, people getting shot at. And I have this ability to be completely calm. When I was about 25, 26 years old, I had a German Shepherd and a Husky. We're living in Antelope, and I was at my job about less than 10 minutes away. And I get a call from my ex, and she was like, Safira bit our other dog, Fury. And I come home, and as I walk in the door, the German Shepherd was literally shooting blood out of the top of his head all over the walls in the kitchen. And I've always been very squeamish as a person. Even a little kid, like picking up dog poop on the floor, was like, you know, just even that was made me kind of sick to my stomach. But for some reason, in moments like that, I'm not thinking about the blood. I'm not thinking about the, all I'm trying to do is like, I go into this completely different space where I'm just trying to save the animal's life. And I put my hand on the top of his head. I held it and I yelled out to my ex, like, go grab this, do this, grab that. And I just like was completely clear of exactly what needed to happen step by step and was calm during those moments. And I feel like I have a feeling that you kind of have that same ability that when everybody's losing their minds and chaos is happening around you, you're able to remain calm and think clearly.
You're right. You know, what you described is, you ever see those music videos where the artist is standing there in the room and then everything's fast forward behind them?
Yes.
That's kind of how it's like.
It's slow motion.
It's slow motion.
I've used that description before.
Yeah. So when everyone is chaotic, or anything is chaotic, or things are moving so fast, your brain is able to still remain calm and still able to think. And you know, these are your doctors. These are your police officers. These are your soldiers.
That's right.
And yeah, it does take that. And I don't know if that's something that's derived from childhood or from trauma.
Yeah.
But I do understand that it's something that we need in society, people to be there when people are not able to necessarily react in the way that's going to save their lives.
100%.
And so people like you, and I've seen you do a lot of philanthropic work, and I'm just so, I think we're lucky to have you here and you doing what you're doing in this show and sharing people's stories.
Well, there's a lot to come with that. I want to transition, but I think a good bridge to that transition is, what would you say is your biggest life lesson from your time in the military? What was the one thing that you kind of walked away with that you were like, wow, this was really impactful for me?
Yeah, I'm going to say that trials and tribulations and failures need to be looked at as stepping stones and lessons to improve yourself, to just be much better. And the reason why I say that is because I see so many people, the moment there's a failure or negative criticism, right? It's not constructive.
Yeah.
The first reaction, naturally human, mentally, is to shut down and separate yourself from success.
So true.
And when I got out of the service, I opened myself up for the first time to criticism. Opened myself for the first time to know that, hey, you know, I'm going to fail. Maybe not everyone wants me in society.
Yeah.
What do people who are doing well in life have to offer? And when they did that, I was able to turn that into a plan of success. And so if you're struggling or you're having a hard time and you're afraid of failure and you feel like there's all these blockades in your life, you know, allow that to be a lesson to move forward. Allow it to empower you and motivate you to move forward.
100%.
These are tools that are untapped. They're available, but they're untapped. We need to start looking at that.
That's a powerful soundbite. I think that we're gonna have to make some reels out of that one for sure. So you come out of the military, you have that crazy kind of lost moment where you're like on your hands and knees, you see the church thing. What happened from there?
Yeah, well, it's the first time I introduced myself to God. I started going to church. You know, my wife had to really pull me into church.
Oh, wow.
You know, before it was like, the Niners are playing. I'll come back next time.
Yeah.
But I got to understand how to utilize, the gospel and the word to better my life. And from that moment on, I knew right away that, you know, someone was always behind me. You know, God was always behind me no matter what. Mountains were being moved. So if God can move mountains, at least I can help push.
That's right.
And so that's when I started to do, philanthropy.
Okay.
And, started with, Katie Katz. She built Victory Bridge. And then I decided
I remember Victory Bridge. Yep.
Yeah.
You're the one who introduced me to that.
Yeah. And, and then I decided that our community needs some help. And that's when I built Changing Cadence Foundation, so we can help our veterans and first responders and their families.
Let's talk about that, because you've had some PR coverage around that. I think it's so neat. It's super inspiring, and you've inspired a lot of other people. I've introduced you to a couple of people just because of this. It's been very buzzworthy and a shareable type of act, but you didn't do this with that in mind. I know for a fact you didn't. Tell me about Changing Cadence and kind of how that kicked off and what you've done with just some of the stuff that you've gotten PR coverage with.
Yeah, you know, I just remember going on a run around the neighborhood, and I just noticed there was, you know, less American flags hanging out, and I haven't heard, you know, much going on around patriotism and the spirit of, in our community with regards to that.
Yep.
And I really felt there was a need to do something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I decided, hey, let's go ahead and just build a philanthropic platform where we get the community involved. We raise money and we help other nonprofits as well, like Roseville Police Activities League.
Yeah.
And fund these people.
That's right.
Let's get the services and the resources out to them. And so, you know, we started out with a walk. Mm-hmm. And when I say we, really, it was me at that time.
Yeah. Didn't you go out by yourself?
And yeah.
You were on, was that Memorial Day?
I promoted Memorial Day last year in 2023. Let's go out there. Come join me. We're going to walk around Blue Oaks Boulevard with American flag and just going to show our spirit.
Yeah.
And nobody showed up except for the news.
Hmm.
And so we had a reporter come and follow me and take pictures. And there's this picture that's out there of me holding the American flag out on the side of the road.
Right.
You know, doing the rock on symbol.
That's right.
And, you know, and I went ahead and went on a Good Day Sacramento.
Yeah.
And I said, we need to make this bigger. And we had 50 people show up.
Wow.
But then this Memorial Day in 2024 is a whole different story.
Wow. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So this time we went back on Good Day Sacramento, KFBK, and broadcasted this. This time we were partnering with the Missy Herrera, who's the sister of Sergeant Nicole G,
okay,
who passed away tragically of the 13 Marines
wow,
that passed away from a suicide bomber during the evacuation of Afghanistan and Kabul during a humanitarian mission.
Wow.
And she's a local. She's part of Roseville.
Okay.
And her sister has, and her family's had to deal a whole lot with that.
Yeah.
So they started what's called the Sergeant Nicole G Memorial Foundation. And they just started in May. So I said, I can help.
Oh, I remember that. That was like worldwide news.
Yeah. It was a national story. It was a world news story.
Yeah.
And they started a new nonprofit. And I really felt that they needed some help to, you know, financially get up on their feet.
Yep.
And so I went right back to the news and said, this time we're gonna walk all the way through Pleasant Grove and through Nicole G Drive.
Wow.
I placed 400 flags in the ground a couple of days prior, and we had the news follow us, and we had businesses involved, and we all raised money, a couple thousand for her.
Wow,
family.
That's powerful,
so,
dude.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So what is your vision and dream with that? What is it you're trying to, where do you want to see this Changing Cadence thing go?
You know, I want this to eventually be a foundation for new resources and new services for veterans that are absolutely accessible, hopefully in all of Placer County.
Mm-hmm.
However that may look, but I think that we're starting to get a lot of interest in the community,
mm-hmm,
to start doing a lot of different things and good things. In the end, I would love Roseville, Lincoln, Rockland, Placer County to be the most accessible and military-friendly county in California.
Mm, that's a really great goal. You know, what's interesting about that is that brings up a conversation we had on social media a few years back. This is probably 2022 now. I remember you telling me, I think I'm going to get into politics. And I'm like, dude. And you know me, I'm just as the rebel, I'm like, forget all that, right? And I knew, I could just tell by your tone that you were going to go after it. What is your spark? What is the thing that is driving you towards the political? Because a lot of people hate politics. A lot of people want nothing to do with politics. They think that the whole system's rigged. The politics is broken. The, you know, elections are broken. Like, what gives you hope? Because you have to have hope in order to take that step and to put yourself out there and to put yourself into a situation where you're going to be scrutinized, looked at. People are going to be digging into you. They're going to try to find whatever they can, every little mistake, parking ticket, cell phone ticket, whatever that problems you've had. What is it that keeps you going, no, I'm going to do this anyway?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and let everyone know I have a lot of parking tickets from San Francisco a long time ago, all paid for. You know, the military prepares you a lot for this.
Yep.
There's a lot of noise. You know, politics can be rigorous.
Yep.
You know, it could be tough. It can be challenging. There's a lot of mud that can be thrown at you. I haven't seen too much, but I'm accustomed to that. So right off the bat, I'm already a candidate for that.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of hope for the future in politics. And I think that eventually there's a time in the world where, you know, people may just get sick of one thing or sick of another, and they just want someone to come in and actually do what's right, do the right thing for the people, for the constituents, and just be really mindful of how the city's developed. And any of that noise, any of this, any maybe quid pro quo, mm-hmm. or any favors, or any type of, you know, agenda that is outside what really needs to happen,
yeah.
somebody's got to do that.
That's right.
And I'm just a very narrow focus, you know, optimistic, but yet also, you know, a corporate minded person. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of hope for a change. And, you know, really, there's not much of a change in Roosevelt. It's already going well.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, I'm very hopeful that we have a lot to work on, a lot of programs to introduce it to our communities and yeah. make the world a better place.
So how has the whole political thing been for you? Because you've been at this, what, a year or two now? A year and a half?
Well, I mean, I've been preparing this for a while, yeah. So when I talked to you, I think, was it 2021?
Yeah.
Or 2022, I can't remember.
21, 22, somewhere yeah. around there.
You know, I knew I wanted to get into politics right away. So, you know, I finished my business degree, went back to school for political science.
Wow.
And you just really started moving forward. And the process so far has been fun.
Yeah.
I am having a blast.
Wow. What is it that you love about it?
People.
Okay.
I love people. I love talking to people. I went down to, I went down to the Box and Donkey and sat down and talked to them for 2 hours.
Yeah.
About, you know, old Roseville. And, you know, I sit down at coffee shops with people for an hour or two and, you know, talk about,
yep.
you know, things that they have issues with the city or what they like to see. I love talking to people. And so far it's been nothing but fun for me.
How cool. With politics, you know, as I've learned about it, when I first started off, I'm, you know, trying to understand politics. I'm like, oh, I'm definitely Republican. Well, I have some Democratic type of, you know, Democrat kind of views. And then as time has gone on, those polls have shifted so far and have become so divided when it used to be here. And it was like, okay, you know, you can have some of both. And one person isn't just all of one thing, right? We have a mixture as each individual, but now it's just become so different. And as time has gone on, I've found myself being more interested in the libertarian principles mm-hmm. of self-governance, you know, personal responsibility, small government, you know, being able to counties and cities being able to take care of their people, and government, the big government, doesn't really need to have the same control and power over it. And being somebody that's been born and raised in California, been my whole life, I've reached this point now where I'm in the planning phases of exiting California, right? Yeah. I just can't handle. I mean, you probably heard about like the 3 cents per mile thing, and you know the medical freedoms that we no longer have here. Medical, you know, religious, you know, philosophical. Any of that's like all of our freedoms are being stripped away, and in a state where it's become so far in one direction, which is not healthy for anything. Right, doing too much of anything is a bad thing. Right, and we're seeing that now. What is your view? Are you going to try to bring things from your perspective more back towards the middle?
That is absolutely, you're 100% correct. That's absolutely what I'm trying to do. You know, the thing is that what we're trying to work on, that middle thing, is starting to be salient but unheard. So a long time ago, you know, we had a little bit more of a bipartisan kind of feel between left and right side.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, you know, polarization of people will start to happen, and especially in the state. And I hate to see that.
Yeah.
You know, and on top of that, we start to see, you know, division within both sides too, which is, you know, called infighting, which we've seen at the federal level. And hopefully, certainly, it's not happening at the local level. But at this point, I'm not focused on necessarily what one side is doing.
Yeah.
But I'm focusing on getting back to that middle centerpiece. You know, what is it that we all have? What's the common denominator?
Yeah.
What is the issue we need to tackle? And what do we need to make sure that needs to happen so that everyone is okay and everyone's happy enjoying living in the state of California?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, in the California, you know, it's up to, you know, Senate and Congressional Assembly to make these bills that affect everybody here locally. But I think that here in local government, we can still make sure that that middle ground is met again. And I'm 100% all about unification.
That's powerful. I think that's, I'm fully behind you in that. And I've seen that consistently for such a long period of time now, online and in person, and just all the actual actions that you take. What I'm curious about is man-to-man, brother-to-brother kind of question. How do you manage all that? Because you have how many children?
Four.
I was going to say, I thought you had four. Four kids, married, former business owner, right? You had a nutrition business in downtown Sacramento.
Yep.
I know a little bit about that story.
I know you've had more than that business. You got the nonprofit, you're doing the political thing. How do you manage it all?
Proper time management. I mean, after this, I'm going to help out Hillebrand Brewery and Hillebrand Brewery's barbecue competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tomorrow I go to, or not tomorrow, on Sunday, I go to NASCAR and I enlist, you know, 20 soldiers.
Wow.
On stage there with the Northern California Army Recruiting Battalion. You know, so there's always a task, but the thing is you have to really just manage the time and prioritize. You know, I'm head of military engagement and veteran programs for a company too.
Got it.
So I always set my priorities, make sure they're done, make sure their tasks are taken care of. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you always make time for things and family as well.
That's right.
It's a skill.
Well, I was going to say that's clearly a skill, because it's not a skill that kind of came naturally to me. It's something I've dramatically improved in. But for people that are like, man, I can't even do half of what you just said that you're doing. What would be some tips that you would give somebody to better manage their time, and I think even more prioritize that, like those things, those tasks? Because I have a list right now, currently, yeah. I wrote it down yesterday, of 14 things that I'm working on. IPOs, I mean, huge projects, Love Gangster, books, documentaries, I have all these things. How do you prioritize what comes first, and what do you put in, you know, in priority?
You know, everyone is gonna have a different priority. I'll tell you what, my family, you know, always come first. And so, you know, obviously there's the financial aspect to that. Yep. So my job has to come first in a sense to where, you know, it provides for my family. But however, yep. The people and politics does take a pretty heavy precedence as well.
Yeah.
And so I always try and find ways to mesh those.
Okay.
But, you know, you just take care of what's most important that keeps you functioning.
Yeah.
Right. So if food makes you stay alive, make sure that you always have food and water.
That's right.
My financials are going to be my food and water.
So like the essentials, what are the, like, basically, I heard somebody talk about this recently, the five essentials every single day. There's or five non-negotiables, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should have five non-negotiables in their life. And so it's like prayer, meditation, you know, time with, you know, undivided time with family, like, you know, no phones, no technology, right? You know, eat, sleep, like those are the non-negotiables, that things that have to happen every single day.
Yeah.
What are some of those things for you?
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to say fitness.
Fitness, there we go.
100%.
Yep.
Fitness is the only thing that is going to tap into your psyche and your physical health. So eating right and staying physically fit, it'll benefit you also mentally.
Yep.
It'll regulate your cortisol levels. And you'll be able to basically function every day a lot better. If you can do that, you can have a sense of clarity in your mind.
That's right.
And start doing that. But also sit down, take a breath, wait a minute,
yep.
Think about it, start scheduling ahead of time. The next time you wake up, you already have this plan. That's a guidance for you for the day.
That's right. That's beautiful. So coming out of that, so we're talking about, your military, your political, some of the business stuff, and where you're going with your nonprofit. What does the future hold for you? Like, beyond just the nonprofit and that side of things and the politics, what is your big dream for your life? Because a lot of people say, and I want to preface it with this. I called a friend of mine, a family member of mine, and I asked him the same question. He's like, well, I just want to get all the things for my family that my dad gave us, and I just want to give my family whatever they want. And that's great. I think that's an admirable thing to be that kind of a husband. But you also matter in the equation, and you have to have your own dreams, your own visions, your own aspirations for you. And there's nothing wrong with living for yourself too.
No, you're right. You know, I just want to look back. If it's gonna be a selfish thing, right?
Yeah.
I want to be able to look back and be old and see my kids still at the dinner table. I want to see us be close.
Yeah.
And I also want to be able to look back and say, that person thrived because we interlocked in some time in life.
Mm.
Or that person thrived because somehow we connected.
Yeah.
I want to have memories that are positive, even if it had negative aspects to it. If the end result was positive,
yeah.
And my family's at the same dinner table, and I can sit there and conjoin hands and pray with them at 86 years old,
yeah.
I think that I have achieved something. And that's what I ultimately want. And again, just like your friend said, that's what I want for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone deserves to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yep.
No one should be deprived of any of that.
That's right.
The 14th Amendment even suggests that.
That's right.
So, you know, I think that's the goal.
I was listening to Andrew Huberman and David Goggins together on the podcast recently,
the
last 24 hours. And in that interview, they're talking about resiliency of the mind. And I think it's a really powerful thing to think about. I find myself to be extremely resilient. I don't know if that's because I watched my grandfather die at 4 years old, my dad and my mom, and their toxic relationship as a baby and losing my mom at like 2 years old and not having her until I was 17. And all the different things I went through, I find myself to be a lot more resilient than most people. Mm-hmm. And that's a muscle, it's a skill. I don't think you're born with that. I think it's something that you build. It takes a lot of pain that you have to go through and suffering, but some of that suffering produces habits and hangups, right? What were some of those habits and hangups, some of the things that you struggled with and challenges that you had in your life that you feel like you were able to overcome? And kind of how did you deal with those? How did you face those? Was it faith? Was it community?
Yeah, you know, so resiliency is the ability to bounce back,
right?
And it is a skill. We went to a school for it through Penn State, and you learn a lot. And it's something that it's not taught in the classroom. It's going to be taught through ways we don't want to.
Exactly.
Right?
The hard way.
But, you know, some of the times in my life, it always was mental challenges. You know, it was not like being diagnosed with any mental issues.
Like depression or something.
But, you know, how am I going to move forward? How am I going to stay in the service and keep doing this forever and ever? Or, you know, the challenges of, you know, it could be relationships, or it could be just, you know, not feeling accepted. Right.
Oh, there you go.
A lot of times, you know, I think that there was times of just feeling like, you know, is my character not worthy? Right. And I've always been different.
Yeah.
I've been a very kind of independent person. But the way I dealt with that was trying to stay collected and understand that, you know, there's methods to walk that noise out. Yeah. Right. And faith is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the ways I was able to be resilient in life was to find God. And to understand that there is a sense of guidance and someone there that who always loves you no matter what.
That's right.
My sense of resiliency came through fitness. It came through my family. It came through my wife.
Really?
My wife is probably the biggest element of resiliency that I've had to encounter in my entire life. But over and all, you know, if you were to say mentally to do it yourself, yeah, you have to learn to not to catastrophize.
Exactly.
And that's really, really easy to do.
Yeah, that's a huge one. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think, just explain the catastrophize thing.
Yeah, to catastrophize, you know, you're taking one issue or one potential issue that might not even exist, right? And what happens is you start to spiral.
That's right.
And you start to add these different what ifs and scenarios one by one by one. So you're into this hole where indefinite failure or, you know, panic happens.
That's right.
It's also part of anxiety. So
exactly,
the best thing to do is when you think of there might be a challenge or the what if question happens, you're going to have to take that what if to what if the good thing happens.
That's right.
Rather than what if I fail this test? Well, what if I pass the test with flying colors?
What if you ace it?
What if you ace it? You know, and that would be cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about setting that foundational thinking when you're met with a challenge.
That's right.
It's also not easy to do, again, but through actual trials, yeah, you eventually build yourself back up with Teflon.
I like that you mentioned the fitness thing too, because, and the wife, we'll talk about that in a second, but the mental toughness that I have found, it's kind of reminded me when I'm in the gym and I'm doing hard things and I'm pulling the sled or I'm pushing weight or even sometimes when I'm in pain and I'm doing it anyway, it's reminded me of that resiliency and that strength that I have to push through the pain. And that pain is always temporary. It may last a minute, it may last 2 minutes, it may last 5 minutes, right? But it's always temporary.
Yeah.
And that's what I found really neat. My wife, as you mentioned, and your wife, right? We have these partners in life that have helped us become the men that we are today. Yeah. Like, we got to give them the credit that they deserve. And the one thing I've admired about you is every time you and I talk, you're always like, hey, say hi to Whitney for me too.
Yeah.
And to acknowledge her, I don't think I've ever had, maybe one or two friends, my friend Brian and maybe one other person, like my best friend Jason, who will actually acknowledge my wife when we're having conversations. Hey, say hi to Whitney for me too. And I always found that to be cool about my dynamic with you, is I wondered, like, where does that come from? You know?
Your spouse is paramount to who you are. There's a saying, and everyone may agree, they may disagree, but I heard this saying that, you know, a man is defined by the woman he chooses.
Mm.
And that could maybe mean something different in my really history past. But you know, the woman I chose to spend the rest of my life with is wonderful. And you know, and I can't take all credit for a character or things I've done for just myself, because everything started with my foundation of support. I learned a lot from my wife. She's amazing. She is the she is basically the force that drives me to keep going, you know. Yeah, and so when I see someone, you know, who has a great marriage, who loves their wife, like you, I know you love your wife so much, and I think it's important that when you're acknowledging another man or another person, whether man or woman, you know, you acknowledge, you know, how's your spouse doing, because you guys run as a unit together, and I know you and your wife do a lot. You guys are very connected, and that's where it comes from. My wife and I are a team. We are absolutely one person. And I think that anyone that has a marriage, you know, they should be acknowledged as one as well.
Would you say that there's an element, because this is what I discovered for Whitney and I, is we met at 16, slightly hooked up, dated at 18, and then a decade went by, saw her half a dozen times in restaurants and places all over town, and then finally we both pulled our heads out of our you-know-what. And we're like, oh, okay. You know, she pursued me in my 30s. I was just about to be 30 years old. And she started pursuing me, which was funny. But what we realized through all of our trials and tribulations, and we've realized not only are we indestructible, but what made us indestructible was the layer of friendship that comes above all of it. Above the romantic and I'm in love with you and all that was the foundational layer that we are friends first. Mm-hmm. And do you find that to be the case with you and your wife?
Yeah, I mean, there's also more layers to it. We when we met, you know, it was essentially a blind date, and you know, we didn't even finish our food. We didn't finish our lunch. We talked so much, and we just enjoyed the time. Like we were friends. Like we could talk to each other. Yeah. We aired out all our if there's any laundry at all, we just aired out everything on the table and just laid this clean slate. And we are just we're homies.
That's yeah, it.
We're friends. We're I don't know what the cool term is these days. These kids.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, she's my best friend, and so we look at it as partners. We're lovers. We love each other to death. But that friendship really helps out, and we actually have this this model. You know, God, family, kids. Mm-hmm. Because to us, you know, God makes you an individual, great person, and also encourages a healthy marriage. And with that healthy marriage, that creates a healthy family.
That's right.
And by doing so, we're able to set a good example for our children. But you're absolutely right. You have to be the best friend of your wife.
That's so good. So what's unique about Love Gangster, aside from the fact that we're talking about killing people with kindness when they're, you know, when they don't deserve it, right? People that are doing things that, you know, mean, hurt people. Let's just keep it to that. One of the things I love to do is I love to have every guest challenge the audience, challenge the listeners, to some sort of task that they need to accomplish, right? There's an actual challenge in every episode, something that I want them to do from your experience, from your mindset, that would be important or impactful to somebody else's life today, this week, that they can come back and report to me and to you and back to social media and to our comments here in the videos and the podcast. I want you to come up with a challenge of what they should do today and going forward.
I love this because I have the perfect one for you, and it has worked for me too lately, and it is the first time I try to do it. You know, I have five sisters, and I think I've been disconnected from one for a long time, you know, and you know, just some slight turmoil. And one day I said, I know she wanted to be acknowledged, and I also want to be acknowledged with her. And so reach out to somebody and just say, hey, I'm thinking about you. If it's been a long time and you haven't heard from them, even if it's a friend that you just haven't talked to, or someone that you had some beef with.
I was gonna say,
If it's even someone who you don't quite get along with, you say, hey, I was just thinking about you today. Hope things are well. And that's it. See what happens. See what the response is. See what the text message comes back. In fact, that might end up creating a conversation that never happened before.
That's right.
And ever since I did that, my sister and I have been closer and closer and closer and closer.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Well, that's your challenge. Reach out to somebody you haven't talked to, that you probably have had even some beef with. I think this is really powerful. Somebody came to my mind when you said that, and I'm going to make that phone call today. Report back to me in the comments, even to Nick. You can reach out to him on social media. Let us know that you took this challenge, that you actually went out, and I want to hear the results of it, good, bad, or otherwise. I want to hear back. report back or you'll be swimming with the fishes. Capiche? All right. Well, we're going to do another episode for sure. This was just the first one. Thank you so much, Nick, for joining me.
Yeah.
I really had a great conversation. I hope you did too. Yeah. And for those of you that haven't tuned in before, definitely check out, subscribe, hit the like button. This video is all going to be produced by Video Marketing Vault, which is our sponsor for this show. And if you guys need any video work, you guys want to create content for your business, your brand, you guys want to put out your message into the world, you have a message you want to share, definitely reach out. Details are down in the comments. I'm Adrian Boysell. This is Love Gangster. And until next time, keep looking up.
Came here to fill the void. I am love. I am peace. I am joy that can never be destroyed. I am.